Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Mayaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange. It's another Monday, which means we bring you more interesting insights, interesting information, and hopefully make your day a little bit better. Nope, still not giving them a shout out, but we have changed names and we have got an update on the great ice saga of 2025. It seems as though you can ask for less ice, which is exactly what I did. But on the show today, we're taking a look at some interesting developments in the world of markets. We're taking a look at some insights out of the US. We're going to look at all of the life decisions that Elon Musk has decided to make of late. We're also going to take a look at the, what is it? It is Liberation Day. We'll make up our own holiday as we go as well. So apparently that's something that we can do. And if we have time, we're going to take a look at some US data points and some South African data points that we might be keen on looking forward to. There is quite an interesting development from a South African perspective that we'll touch on, and that is the future of the VNA. But let's kick things off in an orderly fashion. As I said, this week I am Jim, thanks to a recommendation from our community. Shout out to Jerry, who put that recommendation out for us. We tried it. We'll keep trying them. We'll see how they keep going. Simon is Simon, but if you read it too quickly, he might be someone else. You'll see that throughout the show. But let's get into it. Si, Elon, let's start there, I suppose, right? Deciding that he wants to make some major life decisions, move some debt around into some other companies. But at the same time, he's on a clock of sorts. Apparently, there is 130 days of office and...
Yeah, so by the rules, and I forget exactly what the rule is, but remember Congress actually runs America. It doesn't appear.
It doesn't look that way, does it?
But and you've got 130 days, but and that obviously kicked in on an inauguration day, which was the 20th of Jan. So technically, he's got 130 days in terms of how long he has as lead, as in being in charge of Doggy before he has to step aside.
Does the step aside rule apply?
Why wouldn't it?
Well, it doesn't seem to apply in South Africa. I just figured it would go with it.
I mean, abject of the fact that not much in terms of law seems to apply to the Trump administration, no. and further to that, and we were saying before we went on, for the in crowd, you know, the laws are not a hindrance, but you use them, but you're not bound by them. And for the out crowd, you are bound by them, but don't have access to them. And then they're ignoring everything else. And when judges vote against them, they basically say, we must impeach the judge. They go in direct defiance of judges and shipping people to Salvador, El Salvador, etc. So the short answer is no, but technically yes.
George Orwell said it best, we're all equal.
Yeah. And then is his, the numbers he's talking, also he's just not getting there. So this is the limitation of a tenure of a special government employee, you only 130 days, and then within a 365 day period. And that's to try and stop, the loophole is, I want you as a something and I can't get you confirmed or something. It's like, well then, let me just put you in as a special government employee. Mm. Well, the close of that loophole is sure, but 130 days in any 360 day period. In other words, in a given year, not necessarily a calendar year, but in a running year. So that's his challenge there. And he's just not finding the money he had hoped to. I mean, they're cutting it by $1 trillion and stuff. The numbers just, on Liberation Day on Wednesday, they're going to put 25% on tariffs, and Treasury of Secretary of Treasury stands up and says they're going to make $50 billion revenue, except for a problem. The value of autos coming across the borders is $100 billion. 25% of that is $25 billion. So it's not $50 billion. And secondly, usually what happens when prices go up is demand goes down. So it's not even $25 billion. I mean, yeah.
Speaking of Liberation Day and demand and how things are moving, last week, one of the biggest losing days again for the 2025 calendar year on US markets, wiping up more than $1 trillion in valuations. clearly, this is going very much according to plan, which, interestingly enough, I thought might be the plan. This is something that you and I spoke about. It was sometime in the morning. We spoke about this, and I said, perhaps he's just an evil genius. And this was the plan all along, right? Move liquidity to where you want it to be, get in, and then move the price back up by saying, oh, we're rolling back on everything and everybody can go back to normal.
I hear you on that. I mean, except the S&P is down, what, 10%? I mean, that's, you know, the easier ways to move the S&P down 10%. about 10 off the highs. So, I mean, it's a lot. It's an ugly looking chart, but I mean, I don't know. Yes, the conspiracy theory can be they wanted to crash the market a bit, but they want that market down at, I don't know, 3,600. Let's get really exciting and do a proper little collapse and really get things cheap again. It is helping with the overvaluations because it is the only Mag 7 that is outperforming the S&P this year. And to be clear, that means you're negative. You're still outperforming. Is Meta. The other six, the not-so-mag six, are all doing worse than the S&P so far year-to-date.
So lots happening there, clearly. And even amongst all of this, Elon has other problems he's decided to field. He's decided he wants to move around ownership of X into another company called XAI, which already had an ownership. Why?
Because XAI has value. Okay. I mean, say what you will with Grok. I use Grok. It's perfectly fine. I don't. So what I like with it is when you're on the Twitters and there's a tweet. So like I saw this something about Elon 130 days and I'm like, huh? So I say to Grok, give me some reference for this tweet. And it does. It goes and finds data and shows you links and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's got an AI, much as OpenAI and Perplexity. And
everyone has an AI. Let's make one.
Well, actually,
let's ask an AI to make an AI for us.
I did that. So I mean, I was running Llama on my MacBook, but then it runs in a code I'm not very good with, so it crashed and I couldn't get it going again because my coding's kind of stuck in C++.
Ask an AI to tell you where your coding went wrong.
No, 100%. So that's where the value sits. The value of an X is, I mean, we said it before. I mean, X is a Nazi porn bar. it's nowhere near the $44 billion he paid for it. Not even within 100.
I think the valuation on the transfer is around $33 billion.
Well, that's the
valuation.
Yeah, but that's the $45 billion. So he upped the value from 44 to 45, dropped off $12 billion of debt, said $33 billion. So understand, he's the main man what counted both of these companies. He could consult shareholders and boards, but or he could just send them a WhatsApp, a signal.
Because that's what he's going to do, consult.
So he's basically in an all-share deal, swapped Twitter into XAI where the value lies, given Twitter shareholders some XAI script, and he's probably valued XAI, and I couldn't find out what he valued that part at a couple of hundred billion, so there's not too much dilution happening in that regard. But it does mean that if you were a Twitter shareholder who helped him go private at 44 billion, you're technically not underwater because now you've actually got XAI. I still, and I've said it before on this show, I think that the value in AI, which there undoubtedly is not going to be in the AI companies. It's going to be when you and I launch our own little AI and we don't have to be here. We can be in bed and they can just sort of do a podcast for us. So, yeah, that's the real value of it.
That's true. No, that's true. Community out there, please let us know what you think your uses for AI would be. We would potentially start a podcast and then just go sit on a beach. I know Sai loves sitting on beaches and eating good bunny chows, so that could be a use case for us. But until then, you're stuck with us. We're here. We're here every week for your viewing pleasure. I want to look at the interesting dynamic around the transfers and stuff. It's brought up something quite interesting. Is if given the opportunity, and perhaps we'll do this as a deep dive at some point, I can now see that for some people or for some reasons, there's no value in listing a company. Because your Tesla share price is tanking on this side. Your net worth is being absolutely decimated by the public markets, whereas all of your private businesses, your SpaceX, etc., OpenAI, all of those are protected against that negativity, well, technically speaking, because then they're based less on sentiment. There's no sentiment weighing in on that valuation. It's based on, okay, can we do the numbers? What are the projections? What's the discounted cash flows? Whatever it is you're going to base a valuation on. Whereas in the open market, something like a Tesla, in the same way you get benefit on the upside, you could be down 50% at the start of the year because you couldn't find $1 trillion.
I think you're 100% right. And it comes back to, you know, business leaders or company, whatever, CEOs and owners, etc., should be very careful about wading into politics. We saw Ross Perot do it, 30 years ago, but he had unlisted. Tesla's slightly different because SpaceX, it's more difficult to go and protest a rocket in space. Mm-hmm. Tesla, you can process easier. But I like your logic. I think there are some folks, and I think it's been a trend. We have, you know, everyone talks about how the JSC's lost half or whatever of their listings in the last couple of decades, and that is true. But that's a global phenomenon, and that phenomenon has been driven by, I think, two things. Very low interest rates, which are gone, but nonetheless, they were here. And the rise of private equity and venture capital. Mm. What I mean by that, in the old days, to really get your money out of a business, at some point, you needed to list it. That was your route to making money. You know, at some point, the VCs are like, we're not giving you any more, and now you've got to go to market and we want our return.
Exit, yeah.
Yeah, it was your exit. These days, you've got more exit. Private equity can take you. The VCs will run you much longer.
A bigger company can take you.
A bigger company, a sovereign wealth fund might come along and swoop you up. So there's a lot in that. You've now got many more options. I do think that what we're seeing with Tesla will make some CEOs wonder. You know, and yes, Elon is to the extreme of the process, but it is going to maybe make some CEOs think, why do we go to capital markets to raise money? That's the short answer. And if you can raise money somewhere else, and then it's a nice way to do staff incentives and that sort of thing. But it's a capital raising. If you can raise elsewhere.
Yeah. Why? I mean, look at ARK. They've taken the decision to delist as a result of the fact that that discount isn't narrowing, right?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Remgro did it too. I spoke to the Remgro executives around that, but obviously that's a story for another day. I just want to take a quick pause here before we wrap up Market Matters to say to one member of our community, how dare you doubt us, Mox? We're giving you a shout out for the sole reason that you doubt that we are live. We love you. We really do. But of course we're live. We won't promise you live things and then not show up when you need us most. That's not the kind of people we are. Probably why we're not government employees. Another very interesting thought from James. Jimbo says, maybe one day we can have AI as a third or fourth guest on the show, on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I think that could be worth trying.
So there's a podcast I was listening to, and I forget what it was called. I'll find it in a second. What they do is they do exactly that. So they use – so it requires a lot of editing at this point because there's no sort of simple, smooth way of doing it. The AI responses aren't quick enough, etc. But what they do is they would use, for example, Perplexity or whoever. They would then create a character – and then they would run it through the 11 Labs peeps who do the audio part. And in essence, yeah, they would be able to have a AI as a third guest. Or in fact, at some points, they got two AIs as two guests and they stepped away.
We're going to try that at some point. One day we'll see it.
It requires a lot of edit. So at this point, it still requires editing.
Okay.
Eventually that will fall away, right? Because it'll AI for humans is the podcast. And AI will get, it's the latency issue. So you edit out the latency and then you're good to go.
Oh, there we go. We'll keep looking into the use cases for AI. Again, let us know what your use cases are or what you would use it for. If you have something that perhaps comes to mind when you think about what would make your life easier through the advent of AI, let us know. Put it in the comments. Let us know in the community. Join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Before we wrap up Market Matters, the V&A, probably the most successful shopping mall. I don't want to call it a mall, but shopping mall.
Recent.
Precinct, there we go. Shopping fancy precinct fancy. On the African continent. Certainly
one of the best in the world.
One of GrowthPoint's best assets, if not their best asset. Definitely their best asset. Making some changes. They are going to be introducing a new luxury section, as if it wasn't enough.
Whoa, hang on. Like what? Like
Dolce & Gabbana, LVMH's Louis Vuitton, Kering's Gucci. They're all going to now anchor the new retail development that the V&A is working on. Remember, they're expanding the V&A along that coastline. Yeah. Mm. So now it looks as though we're going to get, I can't even call it a diamond walk, really, but I know that they've had a Gucci store in the V&A waterfront already.
Yes.
So I want to know.
There's a whole bunch down at the end.
Yes, right at the end, just before the Table Bay, right? But I suppose now with the Table Bay renovations happening, they might want to move things around and look at putting it in a different place. I don't really know. But that's what's happening from a V&A perspective. Certainly a very clear sign that, hey, if you've got money, you've got money, eh? If you've got money.
No, absolutely. And it works. So, I mean, we see it in Santon, the Diamond Mile here, where peeps come and will come. They will come in from different parts, particularly of the rest of the continent, to shop at the Diamond Mile. You see in outside Cartier and stuff in Paris, a lot of Asian folks who basically fly in, because in China you've got giant queues and you've got them there as well. But folks will fly in from Asia into Paris to buy their fancy stuff. Why not do the same in Cape Town?
Talk about a different tax bracket, eh?
Yeah, I mean,
talk about a different tax bracket.
Yes. Different tax bracket.
Those in our community that are in that said tax bracket, let us know if you are looking forward to this. Let us know if it's a place you want to go to, if you would enjoy a new, I don't know, Diamond Walk-ish setup in Cape Town. I mean, clearly.
So I enjoyed it. They're fun to do, but like keep your hands in your pocket and walk in the middle, hey, because like you make a mistake there and you are dead. Just saying.
But it could be an interesting thing as well, because I think even with what you're seeing in Sandton, as you said, people fly to different places to access different things, right? Mm. Luxury isn't done the way it's done in Europe, in Africa yet, right? And I say that because you look at the size of things. Look at, take Harrods in London, for example. That is... I've walked through Harrods, and you are very right. So I kept my hands in my pockets and stayed as far away from things that could be breakable as humanly possible. Mm. But it's not to say that luxury is not growing in Africa. It's not to say that appetite isn't growing. It's certainly growing here. And perhaps that's what someone like the V&A might be looking at. Perhaps that's what they're seeing, is to say, we're seeing increasing number of tourists coming to South Africa, and particularly Cape Town. And that attractive destination in Cape Town certainly is not Canal Walk if compared to the V&A. I mean, if you put the two of them together, Canal Walk, there's nothing wrong with Canal Walk. It's a very nice kind of mall to walk through, I'm sure. But when you put the two of them together and you look at where Aston Martin has decided to put their dealership, where Daytona has decided to put their dealership, it's not near Canal Walk.
Yeah. So Canal Walk, top tip, go to Canal Walk, but don't go to Canal Walk. Go to Long Walk to Freedom just next door. Awesome. I agreed with you. And it is, I mean, it comes back to luxury. I mean, the proper luxury, the folks who are flying in to buy things, etc. I mean, in tough times, they get hurt a bit. But the real top end of luxury is like that. They're so rich, they never poor.
Those are the ones that buy the piece of land in Clifton at 100 plus million rand.
And then knock it down.
It was a piece of land. It had nothing on it to knock down. But paid more than 100 million rand for it. It was on Property 24 at some point. I think it was listed at about 130 odd million rand. Came back. Had a sold sign next to it. Yeah, no, look, I didn't say I intended to buy it, okay? I was just looking. So, but yes, it's a very telling sign. At the top end, it doesn't really matter. And perhaps this is what that top end wants. They want exactly this.
Yeah, and it's why you own some Richmond.
That's it.
Mm. Or race.
Or race. Mm. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of Market Matters. I'm going to leave on a rather unfortunate note, right? This is a new problem. Paper straws. I can now see the logic behind why Donald Trump decided to sign an executive order. They're not practical. Not for this conversation, perhaps for an unfiltered opinion. But we're going to leave Market Matters on this note. Shout out to everybody that joined the community. Thanks so much to our TikTok community. You guys are awesome. The commentary that we've been getting on the multi-choice video, on the credit score videos, on all our content, really, you guys are absolutely amazing, and we do what we do for you. Shout out to our YouTube community for joining on the live stream. Thanks for sharing the journey with us. Thanks for joining the conversation. Remember, if you've got questions, pop them through. If you've got comments, pop them through. We'll see if we can get to them. Until next time, that's been Market Matters. We're going to get into the deep dive now, and we're going to be diving into consolidation, debt consolidation, and potentially how to pay down your debt quicker. So tune in for that. That's going to be released later in the week. But for now, this is Market Matters, and we're going to leave it on that note. And in our deep dive this week, we are taking a look at paying down your debts and potentially using methods like debt consolidation. Does it really work? Does it make sense? Which might be options that you could potentially explore if debt consolidation is not an option? Obviously, this is not financial advice. As we have said, we have a disclaimer at the start of our show. We have a disclaimer at the start of our videos. And we will add a disclaimer to our audio as well in case people want to go that route. This is not financial advice. These are the opinions of two gentlemen who have way too much time on a Monday morning and want to share those opinions with you. The issue of debt is a painful one for everyone, ourselves included. I mean, whether you're in a debt situation, whether you've gotten out of a debt situation, there's a story, there's an ongoing story, there's a previous story, there's always an experience where it comes to this. And I've seen that a lot of the comments or the searches or the insights that people are looking for at the moment is how to clear it. So we've come out of a pandemic. We've come out of probably the worst 5 years that people have experienced in the last 50 years in terms of volatility, uncertainty, banks changing policies, everything you can imagine that could have taken place has taken place, short of a recession, which is not far off at this point, right? Mm-hmm. And in all of that, people have made different decisions. People have decided to relook at their lives, reevaluate what's important, how to prioritize and all of that. And paying down debt seems to come up over and over and over as something that people would like to kind of get done and get it done right. Mm. Now, I don't think there is a right way to do it. I think there is a way that lines up with your circumstances that could be beneficial to you. But I don't think there is one silver bullet that then says, hey, this is it.
I think you're right. I think it depends on levels of debt, depending also what the debt is, depending on are you struggling to pay or are you not paying. Mm. Those are two different, you know, processes. How much it is, et cetera, et cetera. You know, those sort of things. So ultimately, you know, we often talk in fairly broad sort of strokes around things. I mean, as we did, what was it, just last week around credit scores and the like. It is unique to everyone. And I think to net debt even more so. And of course, the thing with debt, you know, credit scores emotionally, yeah. That has no, but debt is a different story. Debt is it can become emotional. It can be, you know, it can really stress you.
Mm. Absolutely. Probably one of the most stressful things that you go through as an adult. I think back to anything you can really think of. Nothing compares to debt in terms of stress levels.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing compares.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not even right up there. It is up there. It is the one thing, right? And if you can somehow manage to get out of it and the challenge there then becomes not slipping back into it and all of those sorts of things, right? So it's one of those traps that is very difficult to get out of. And when you see the difference that it makes out of it, it's a completely different story because you start to think about things like the compounding effect, right? So I look at it from the perspective of something like black tax, which has always been a sensitive topic for those that are experiencing it, for those that go through it. But effectively, if you are starting off your life journey in debt because you don't have the savings, because you weren't passed down the car that you that someone else may have been passed down, because you didn't have a one-bedroom apartment as a start off to start off your life, you already start off 100 steps back before.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those
and you're
are not
even
things,
talking around education.
That's
and
it. It's not even talking about school fees, varsity fees, and all of that, because those are not things that you have the luxury of saying these are luxuries. A roof over your head for some people is not a luxury. A vehicle to get to work for some people is not a luxury because you might work far away from your workplace and it might not be practical to take public transport. So say, for example, you work in a call center and you work nights. Yeah. You can't be relying on taxis at 1 o'clock in the morning when your shift ends. So sometimes these things are necessities and the banks don't look at you and say, oh, you're a first timer. This is a new thing for you. Let's take it easy on you. No, they're after their profit no matter what.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it is, I agree with you. There are, you know, I was going to say in South Africa, and probably we are unique in some ways, but there are different people are in different parts of their process. And some people are absolutely 100 steps behind. And typically, they are poorer, often more rural, and that just perpetuates the challenges. I mean, it just doesn't go away. You start 100 steps behind, it means your kids start 1,000 steps behind.
Absolutely. It becomes a generational thing.
Yeah.
So when you look at things like debt consolidation, that becomes something that you consider. You then look at your situation and you say, perhaps if I lump together everything using one new debt, then everything, you know, can go away and all of that. Now, the interesting thing about that is that there are good and bad reasons to potentially consider that, right? And I want to look at that. I want to start by looking at some of the good that can come from it.
Well, in the simplest sense, you've got a whole bunch of loans, some of them store cards, credit cards, whatever they might be. You're probably not going to consolidate a home loan because you're not going to get cheaper. You might consolidate a car loan as well. You've got a whole bunch and it's just, you know, different people phoning you, different interest rates. If you can consolidate into perhaps a lower rate and a longer term, you can reduce the, well, you can get to a monthly payment which is affordable for you. So in other words, you can manage your day-to-day living, and then you've kicked the can down, 100% you have. But sometimes that's what we need to do in life to make it really work. And it does. The point is, you take all those different loans, you borrow a pile of money, you pay them off. You don't get more money. You just get this, the money you owe. You owe 10 grand, you borrow 10 grand. You pay off all those different loans, you still owe 10 grand. But now it's to one supplier, you can potentially get a better rate, and you could potentially also get a longer term, which means that you were, let's say you were having to pay $800 a month and you were struggling. Now you can pay $600 a month. You're not struggling, instead of being maybe a 2-year repayment, and the math don't add up because I'm making up numbers as I go along. Instead of being a 2-year repayment, maybe it's a 3-year repayment. And that just gives you that extra $200 a month, which might be the breathing space you need. Challenge is to not get back into debt, but that's the bad side of it. So I think, and I, you know, as opposed to debt counseling, which is another whole, which is a different story. Debt counseling is not consolidation. Debt counseling is you know, this can, this will protect your credit record, because you're not defaulting on debts, you're paying them. So, you know, you pay off all those little monies, so your credit record comes out of it looking a whole lot better. Your creditors, people you owe money to, are a whole lot more smiley at you, and you've maybe got a little bit of wiggle room in your month to month.
But there are downsides, right? And for example, from a debt counseling perspective, you now have to declare that to a future creditor, that you are under debt review, you are under debt counseling and all of that. And that then could negatively impact how that future creditor might look at your situation, right?
Sure.
Because then they might look at, so you become a higher risk from that perspective. On the side of debt consolidation as well, there are downsides to that as well. And chief among them is that new interest that you are saying. So yes, you are getting rid of other interests, but you're entering into effectively a new credit term that is starting at a zero point. So now you are in for a new fresh 5-year term, if you were, for example, 2.5 years into a credit debt repayment or whatever. And that new 5-year term could potentially set you back, because unlike the other forms of credit, and there are good forms of credit, I think of something like a revolving loan and something like a credit card that we've spoken about in the past, something like the debt that's used for debt consolidation typically, not always, typically is a personal loan.
Yes.
And typically a personal loan is kind of put at an interest rate of anywhere between 20 and 30%, up to 28 to 29%. So if, for example, your credit card was being financed at 19% by the bank, and suddenly you're being financed at 27% on the new debt, you're effectively paying more interest.
You're paying more. And by kicking the duration out, you're paying more as well. So ultimately, it is going to cost you more money. And that's not insignificant or meaningless. This whole, absolutely. You're going to pay more money. The trick is, and the bank loves it, right? You got a credit card at 19 and you go to your bank and they consolidate into a 28. They're like, you're
happy. They're happy. This is great.
And the other problem is now your credit card's back. You know, they don't take the credit card away from you. You need to cut it up or have the discipline or something. So what that debt consolidation does, aside from the potential rate, you will certainly end up paying more because of duration and potentially because of rates. And what it then does is it frees up your capacity to get debt. So you could, in 6 months or a year, have redone the whole thing, be back in a hole, but still have the consolidation. So it requires some really strong discipline from the end of it.
And also some of it is not, so the discipline part I hear, right? But some of it is also life circumstance. So I consolidate something and the intention is to be on good footing. We do this, And then 6 months down the line, I have an unexpected bill. Something happens, the geyser bursts. I don't have the money for it. I dip into the credit card. And life happens, right? That's the thing. That's the unfortunate part about it, is life happens. So how do you then look at different methods if something like debt consolidation isn't an option? How do you then look at what can I do to bring down the debt, to manage the payments? One of the examples is paying off the highest interest bearing debt first to free up more to pay off the rest. So if you, for example, are paying 700 or 800 rand on a store account, and that is whatever at 18 or 19%, but at the same time, you are paying at 24% a credit card that is costing you 4,000 or 5,000 rand a month, you might be tempted to then say, okay, can I ignore the store account for a little bit to pay down this one and try to manage it that way? But of course, the moment you start ignoring the payments, we come back to the conversation we had last week in our credit score conversation around the fact that missed payments start to negatively affect that. So how do you even get that balance?
So I hadn't even thought of that. So don't ignore anything ever, but phone the peeps and say, can I have a 3-month holiday? And you will accrue interest and it will get tagged on your credit record. But that 3-month holiday you can now use to...
It's a plan.
To hit the big debt. Because what you want to do is not tackle the big debt in terms of size, in terms of interest. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're paying, I don't know, let's pick a number. You're paying 1,000 rand in your most expensive debt, whatever that might be. If you can find an extra 200 or 300 bucks and pay that off quicker so that it goes away quicker, because that's the one costing you money. And maybe that 200 or 300 bucks comes from a side hustle, maybe it comes from friends, family and fools, or maybe it comes from going to Edgar's and say, guys, can I pause for a couple of months here? And oftentimes, you know, when you owe people money, what they're terrified of is that you stop paying and stop talking. Always be talking. Engage with them. If you are phoning them and saying, hey, I'm having a problem, can I this, that, or the rest? They're just so glad that you phoned instead of them having to chase that they are invariably going to be happy to do something. But the snowball effect is the idea that you find the big one, you put a little bit money extra every month so that it pays away quickly. And let's say you're paying 1,000 on the credit card every month, but you manage to find an extra 300. So now you're paying 1,300 on the credit card. And then, I don't know, it's gone in a period of time. In that period of time when it's gone, you've now got 1,300 rand a month to put to your next worst and your next. So you're carrying on to pay them, notwithstanding maybe you requested a holiday somewhere, but you take your most expensive in terms of interest and you nail that one. Make it gone. And then you move to the next one and the next one. It's going to take time. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, I know someone who got into 100K debt as a 20, you know, young 20-year-old, just students, credit cards. Mm. I mean, fortunately, when I was a kid, credit cards were like fancy things for people who banked at Nedbank. Ain't no one else. But she got into 100K and Woolies card, you know, all of that. And it took her about 2 years to clear it. I mean, it's not something which vanishes overnight. This is going to take some time.
I think what you said about the payment holiday is such an important thing, because we don't even know that these things are options, right? Yeah. So for a lot of the debt, you don't even know that you can go and have this conversation and say, can I have a payment holiday? Especially when some of the debt forces you to take out what is known as insurance. So creditors, insurance, and all of that. Mm-hmm. You can lean into something like that and say, hey guys, I would like to use, obviously from an insurance perspective, they have very specific conditions and terms that will allow you to access that. But that could be an option. And if you are considering all options, definitely look at that and say, can I request a payment holiday? The worst they can say is no, you cannot. But you would have asked and you could potentially find yourself better off for it. The other one that stood out that you mentioned, Si, was around increasing income. And I think it ties in with the conversation around paying off a little bit more or topping up the payments or whatever. So increasing your payments. So let's say, for example, you take a store account where your monthly repayment is 500 Rand. Mm-hmm. Understand that store account, that minimum amount due, is in the best interest of the store, not of you. So they give you the lowest possible amount that you need to pay because they've stretched that debt as far as possible. So if your store credit amount is 500 Rand that you need to pay off and you happen to have the ability to pay off 750 or so, pay off the 750. Don't pay the 500. We are often tempted to just say, okay, I can just pay the minimums everywhere. And that's also, again, down to circumstance. So sometimes I can't afford to top up more. I can't afford to pay more. But when you can, that additional payment simply means that when they look at your profile, because the store guys, particularly the RCS kind of loans, they assess your interest on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
On the monthly balance equivalent. So what that means is if you're paying 500 Rand now, they take their interest portion. After their interest portion, the capital is, or a portion of the capital is settled. So let's say of the 500, 400 goes to interest and 100 goes towards the capital. If you're topping that up and paying 750, they still take only 400 for interest, but now your capital is decreasing instead of by 100 Rand by 350, right?
Correct.
So next month when they review it, they charge you less interest because your capital balance due to them is lower. So increasing your payments wherever possible certainly helps.
It's why I call snowball, because it starts really slow and then it sort of really gathers momentum. And it's the, I said, you know, find some extra money. I mean, there's the other things when looking at your budget is your insurer, you know, phone your, so get some competing quotes on your vehicle insurance and then go back to your insurer and say, hey, I need a cheaper rate. I mean, it's that, you know, and you can find little bits here, there, and everywhere. I know everyone at the end of last year, beginning of this year, was going and haggling their bank for better, lower interest rates on their home loans. Now, most people get like, no, thanks, but, you know, try again. And I think you can request a review. Your bank will have a certain frequency. And some people were only getting a measly 0.1 lower. But it's 0.1 lower. To your point, it means that the interest component is less, or your monthly fees are a little less. Some people got a drop of 0.25% in their home loan, because when you took that home loan out, your circumstances are potentially different.
One of the other things that I found was something that a good mentor once said to me was, if you have things like a bonus coming through and you have that big lump sum and you're looking at obviously tackling the biggest debt or whatever it is, right? Before you make that debt payment, make a simple phone call, send a simple email to the creditor and say, can I have a settlement amount? Your settlement amount, 9 times out of 10, is less than what you owe in terms of the overall debt.
Yeah.
So they give you a discounted rate on the settlement because it's early settlement.
Yeah.
It means they get to recover their money sooner, which means they also don't get to charge you interest for the full term.
And it removes the risk.
And reduce the risks from their perspective, as the creditor. So now, if you are sitting there with a lump sum of cash and you know you're going to pay off your credit card, or you know you're going to pay off this personal loan, or you know you're going to pay off a car loan, for example, car loans in particular, phone and say, hey guys, can I have a settlement letter, or can I have a settlement amount? And as Si said earlier, most of the time they would rather have you come with that as a offering than for them to have to come after you, which could also be hugely beneficial if you had anticipated that you were going to settle at a certain level and now suddenly you get to settle for less.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And it's that. And it goes back to, you know, make the calls or the emails or something. Engage. Absolutely.
Very interesting thoughts. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your reflections, your experiences. Please let us know what your journeys have been like. Obviously, as we said at the start of the segment, every journey is different. Every circumstance is different. This wasn't financial advice. This was just a couple of scenarios that you could potentially explore. Hopefully one of them helps. Hopefully one of them is a guide that you can use in other areas. And we'd certainly love to hear if you have had experiences that have benefited you, where you've used a particular technique or you've used something that has allowed you to clear your debt quicker. Please share that with us. Share that in the comments. Share that in our community. We love to engage on these sorts of matters because at the end of the day, we're all better for it. We're going to leave the deep dive on that note. We're going to get into investor insights. We're going to get into some interesting announcements from the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. They are looking at taking a stricter stance on what is called finfluencers, which we could potentially be. To wrap things up with Investor Insights, we are taking a look at some developments from the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. They have issued a new conduct standard. It is the first conduct standard of 2025 that they have issued, and it relates to institutions or financial institutions in particular that are providing financial education initiatives. Now, they've issued this conduct standard as part of a broader conversation that's been happening with the FSCA. They are unhappy with the way that financial advice and financial communications are being had. And certain conversations are as a result of what has been put out there in the past. So things like finfluencers are a very hot topic for the FSCA at the moment. That is people that come onto social platforms, give financial advice, or tell you that these are the financial things that you should be looking out for. And people kind of take that advice on board. Now, again, there's a reason we have a disclaimer. And that is because even though we might look like finfluencers, we work in the financial services space, we are not providing financial advice. We're sharing our opinions. The show tells you that we share unfiltered opinions, and that's exactly what they are. Opinions. Take them as opinions. If you want financial advice, we'd be happy to put you in touch with some really good financial advisors that are not us. But this is a serious thing, right? So from the perspective of protecting consumers, right? I've been a very big and very vocal advocate around this, particularly in the trading space, because I come from that trading world, and it was a very clear thing that the FSCA had been concerned about, is that people, there isn't enough financial education out there, and the financial education that is being provided might not be of the highest standard or of the quality that it should be. And I've been very vocal about this. I do these conversations with the FSCA quite regularly on the radio shows, that we discuss the things that you need to know to protect yourself as a consumer. And this conduct standard and the way that the FSCA is looking at the financial services world, it's a very important thing at this time, because as we spoke about in the deep dive, everybody's trying to look for a way to take the pressure off from a debt perspective. And one of those ways is dabbling into the world of trading, is dabbling into the world of investments and that sort of thing. And that's a very different world if you don't have the requisite experience and you don't have the requisite knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, you remember, and these days, weirdly, it's been overtaken by betting websites.
Yes.
But there was the Telegram channels and the Facebook groups, and to a one, they were nearly all scams. Some didn't start as scams. I mean, 20 plus years ago, I knew someone who started legitimately, although he wasn't fully registered. And then it turned into a scam because of circumstances. He had a bad month. He couldn't admit it. So he fudged numbers and ended up in jail, which is the right place for those people, to be clear. Not many of them get to jail, but he did. And it is, there is, yeah, I was chatting with someone last week and we were talking around sort of this and, you know, why aren't more people putting their $100 a month into easy equities or something? And I'm like, because we are a country of poverty. People aren't worrying about retirement. They're worried about the weekend.
Now, yes.
Yeah. And not the weekend that they want to go and drink it away. They're worried about food for
paying
the weekend,
bills. Absolutely.
Transport to this and that. And trying to get a job.
Getting to work. Yeah. For some, public transport is not getting cheaper. Inflation is going up. Petrol prices are going up. It is not the cost of living in a country that has got the unemployment rate that we have, that has got the inflation and interest rate levels that we have. It's not a cheap thing, right? So we might look like, relative to other countries, we have a better quality and a better standard of living. And I believe that to a certain extent we do. But again, when you compare us to other countries, you also have to take into account the fact that our currency is 20 times weaker than a British pound, or 23 or 24 times weaker than a British pound. So we definitely have our own set of problems. Nobody's denying that. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, Si, around the fact that people are looking for survival. No one's thinking about how do we get beyond. And there is a group of people out there that take advantage of that, that put self-preservation above doing the right thing and above providing good information, right? And that group of people is the reason why the FSCA has their hands full with these sorts of conversations. It's the reason why you get impersonated 17 times in a month. I'm not at Simon's level of celebrity yet where I'm impersonated as often, but you get the point, right? It's that because of the vulnerabilities that exist, there are always people out there that want to exploit those vulnerabilities. And it's our responsibility as individuals to look after ourselves, to take the precautions, to educate ourselves and all of that. But I also, I think for me, it became a personal thing when I started working in the financial space more directly and I started realizing the vulnerabilities, especially in the pandemic. I mean, the 2020 pandemic for me was quite a critical turning point, because as a young 20-something-year-old in the financial services world, I had to take a decision around the kind of person I wanted to be in the world of financial markets. And I say that because it was at a time where you could very easily, like you say, set up something on a Telegram channel. It becomes a scam. You figure out how to do it and you do those sorts of things, right? Side note, if you find anything on any social platform where I'm asking you for money or Simon's asking you for money, it's not us.
I've never slid into someone's DMs, not once.
That's it. Simon doesn't slide into DMs and neither do I. So that's what you need to be wary of. But for me, again, back to 2020, that was a critical moment for me to decide what type of person do you want to be in that space and in that world. And I did something interesting at that time was we built an online educational academy. And you know about the academy, mm-hmm. Si. You've seen the academy. And I'm looking to change the academy at this point because I'm looking to increase the amount of accredited material that is out there. And it comes back to this thing from the FSCA around providing financial education initiatives. It's so important that you find the right kind of information.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that we are the perfect source of information, but we do our little bit in our little corner. You and I have these conversations in our little corner, and hopefully from these conversations, people can get a little bit more comfort in dealing with some of the challenges that come with navigating this financial world.
Yeah, 100%. The challenges, I mean, the regulators are slow to act on the scammers. And I also think that by moving to betting, which is an unregulated market, I've seen the adverts on the Twitters where, you know, Super Sisu put down R5 and made 300,000. If a brokerage firm did that, they would be shut down in a minute. Mm-hmm. But the gambling site's like, yeah.
And I think that comes to another dive we're going to have at some point around either the world of gambling or the world of advertising, because there's a responsibility that sits with the advertising association that says promoting these sorts of things. And obviously they can easily say, oh, but these companies are regulated by the National Gambling Board and therefore we've done nothing wrong. But perhaps there should be that conversation. And you've said this before, Si. You've said that you have a particular dislike and disdain for gambling companies because they do not protect their customers, because they do not promote ethical practices, but they don't promote responsible practices.
And when you make money, they kick you off the platform. I mean, I know a chap who had he used to make money betting on T20 games, and he was doing really well, and he got canned. He got told, close to your account, take your money, please leave. And they are, you know what they're doing is they're giving you that promise of not even maybe, look, you know, turning 10 rand into 300,000 is vast riches. You're not Johann Rupert, but, you know,
it's a life changer. Yeah.
Yeah. For most people, for pretty much everyone, it's going to be a life changer, except Johann and Patrice and Dangote and others. Yeah. Tax brackets. And folks who don't have tax brackets because they're rarefied air. But how many people actually win it? And there's small things. Like if you go to IG right now and you log onto their page, they will tell you that 72% of clients are short. And up there, 70% of retail accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. Hmm. That is a legal requirement. When I go to Betway, it's Betway now. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be telling me that. They're not going to have anything in that regard. Their Twitter has no disclaimer whatsoever. And they're going to argue there's not enough space. And then some account has been removed because it breached community standards, which is awkward. This is weird. You won't remember the market in the 90s. I remember meeting with a bunch of guys in Durban. They were young kids. They were students at UKZN, and their fathers were working for audit firms and auditing JSC listed companies. And their fathers would, I suppose, whisper in their ear, and they would go and buy the stocks. Mm. And this was their investment club. And they invited me to their investment club the one evening, and I come all prepared, and I got. And they're like, yeah, my dad said those results are going to be good. Ah, they buy that. And I'm like, in all my hard work, they're like, well, what did your dad say? I'm like, my dad's dead. It's like, oh, then go away. And it was, and we've come a long way to fix it. Mm. But to be clear, it's still not fixed. There are still all the challenges and messes, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the danger, right? I suppose that's part of what industry needs to tackle. Obviously, various members of industry have various feelings around whether or not it's their responsibility. Some will say, look, we didn't force you to open this platform. You entered of your own free will and that sort of thing. And I suppose that's where the other side of the conversation comes in around educating yourself. The FSCA is going to run a consumer education program. They have been running several programs for the longest time. And I think we're also going to do our part in reaching out to them and collaborating with them on these sorts of things. We're going to extend an invitation to share what we can and to use our platform, the great platform that you guys have built, the audience, the community that we've built. I think it's high time we kind of all come together and promote the right sorts of conversations, the right sorts of practices. If something doesn't make sense, we kind of call it out as it should be called out. And that's also been part of the problem for many years is we haven't called things out because at some point someone makes some money, or at some point someone says, you keep quiet, don't rat on me, so to speak.
Mm.
And I think that's part of the damage that's being done, right? At the end of it is people fall victim to these things because nobody's speaking out against them. And so they look legitimate. And you can make things look very legitimate.
Sure, sure.
That's very easy to do, you know? If you know what it is you're looking for, what it is you're doing, you can make things look very, very fancy. But I suppose this is where conversations with people like the FSCA, with yourself, with myself, these conversations then need to take that step further to protect those out there that could potentially fall victims to these things.
Absolutely. And there is, and not unique to us, the rags to riches. Right? Mm. And who doesn't want to be, whatever your rags are, you wish they were better and that you were richer.
Absolutely.
I mean, even Patrice is out there saying, oh man, my
yacht is too small.
Yeah, it's looking, got a little scratch in it, need new yacht, need second yacht, yeah. Need whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Weirdly, yeah. But there is a preying on that, on the people. Now, some of it is not even so much the praying of it. Some of it's just offering products which are simply not suitable. CFD is unsuitable for most people. They're highly emotional. They can lose you lots of money and potentially more than you start with. Some of them are just out and out fraud. And we are, you know, that they are, you know, we're calling the CFD providers fraud, but there's that person who interjects themselves in the middle who is.
But also there are some of those providers that are.
There are
providers. I mean,
Let's be clear about that.
Right. So we're not absolving anyone of this. We have seen highly regulated companies come into a market, push people to go into a trade or into doing something that they are uncomfortable doing with the promise that you will be rich, you will make your money, you will do this. When that doesn't work out, they say, put more money in, you will be even richer when you recover, almost trying to promote a martingale type of strategy. And let's be clear, martingale is something that is very commonly used in a casino. So again, you're probably weighing up the same odds there. But not everyone is perfect. And I think that's, I don't want to say not everyone's perfect. Let me rephrase that. Some people are genuinely out to do bad and not good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's for you to protect yourself. It's for you to look at that. And I mean, I'm sure you can tell by this conversation that we are clearly very passionate about fighting something. And at some point you also feel that you don't have the strength to fight it because it's just the two of us, right? It's just the two of us. But thankfully, the two of us now have more than 25,000 of you as part of our community. Yeah. And perhaps that's it. Perhaps that's what our community is here for.
And an important point is understand how we help people around money. And it's the horse to water story. You can lead the horse to water. If you don't approach someone and say, I know, and you wait for them to come to you. Make yourself known as the person who knows a little bit about the market and make yourself known that you're happy to chat so that when someone in your broader community, whether it be work, home, places of worship, whatever it might be, when someone in your broader community is thinking about it or has heard something or has seen an advert or has been approached, someone slid into their DM, or whatever, they know to go and say, to have a word with you. Don't go to everyone and say, careful of the scams. Wait for people to approach you and then engage them. The problem is quite simple. Every time there's been a scam, Miritrade International,
BHI Trusts,
the Ref Waynes, etc., and I expose them as scams, man, the hate that I get, the threats that I get. I mean, I was getting anonymous phone calls and people driving past my house because remember the old days, telephone books which had your address? I mean, how quaint was that?
We've come a long way.
And it's in some cases, it's the people who know it's a scam, but like, don't collapse it until I'm out. Mm. In other cases, it's just people who really honestly believe it's legit. And I use every platform I've got, Miritrade International. And I just got hate. To a person, I got hate.
But it's what you're saying. So it's, you can take a horse to water and can't make it drink, but there are always people that are going to be out there doing things for malicious reasons. Community out there, we will do our best where we can to see if we can help and to see if we can protect individuals. But of course, the responsibility still sits with you. If something is too good to be true, probably is. If something doesn't make sense and somehow you need to put up money to get more money, do some due diligence. Research, do some homework, look into things a little bit more, ask questions, never be afraid to ask as many questions as you want to. It is your money at the end of the day. Someone can't be forcing you to give your money until you are absolutely comfortable to do it. We are unfortunately out of time, which means we're not going to be able to get to our wall. We are going to do something quite interesting. Cy and I are going to do something very special for our community. We've got a major announcement to make around that. We might make it in the week. We might make it on next week's episode. We will keep you updated around that. It's something very special to kind of take our community through quite an interesting journey that we think might be beneficial to everybody, and we'd love to get your feedback around that. We'll keep the wall going. We'll keep adding to it and moving it around if we can. Final parting thoughts from our side to our Muslim community, which we now have seen extends to other countries outside of South Africa and the Middle East. We wish you all a pleasant Eid Mubarak. I think the next big holiday that we have coming up is Easter for our Christian communities as well. If there's something in between that we missed, I'd love to know, because I don't know if there is. I saw an interesting thing, just as a side note, someone was saying that we're getting dangerously close to those two times kind of overlapping because of how Ramadan moves up 10 days every year, and how Easter kind of sits in the same space.
Sometimes Easter's March, sometimes it's almost May.
Yeah.
This year it is the 18th through to the 21st of April.
Here's our unfiltered opinion of the week on that very note. A work week that is 3 days long, or that is 4 days long. A four-day work week, folks. The weekend officially should start on a Friday, and not Friday afternoon at 3 p.m., a Friday should be...
So when I do my week right, my weekend starts at about 9:10 on a Friday morning.
Okay.
And it's perfect because then it changes Saturday, fundamentally changes Saturday.
So that's our unfiltered opinion of the week. We all deserve a four-day work week. We'd love for you to let us know which 4 days you would prefer. Would you want a four-day work week that has your weekend starting on a Friday, or that has your weekend ending on a Monday? Because as Garfield said it best, everybody hates Mondays. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.